welcome everybody to the Magic Beans podcast. We are back again for episode number 142. I'm your host tonight, and my name is Shorty, and I have a couple of beans on the line with me. Tonight we have Chewy. How's it going, mate?
I'm stoked on Dominaria Limited. How are you?
I am also stoked on Dominaria Limited, which we will be getting in tonight. And because this is going to be a limited-focused episode, we have to get our resident limited specialist, Stu, back again. How's it going, mate?
I'm fairly certain I am not a limited specialist. I just like throwing gems away. But I still think it's the most fun you can have in Magic. But hey, it's good to be here, guys. It's been a little while. Thanks for letting me come back on.
Yeah, too many early work mornings for you on Friday mornings means
the only
staying
way to
up
get
late
on the
for
cast
the podcast is hard.
The only way to get back on is to call a sickie the next day.
Clearly, what we're doing here,
works, mate.
Yeah, Stu just has a limited appearances on the cast.
Okay.
You got that soundboard handy, Shorty?
Yeah.
Throw it in post production.
One day maybe I'll splice some things in post production, but it's probably just not going to happen. that's too much effort. We had someone request that we put timestamps in our show notes for the different topics that we talk about. Even that's too much effort. Like, it's probably not that hard to do, but nah.
Just listen to the whole thing.
Get what you're given. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
You don't want to miss out on the best bits by skipping to specific stuff.
Imagine
just
if you'd skip to the main
thing.
Topic, you might miss my gags in the intro. So, yeah.
Actually, okay, maybe can we should do something?
Very good. All right. So, tonight is going to be a limited focused episode ahead of our one-day sealed event that's happening this weekend, which I am very excited about. That's going to be an absolute blast, I think. So, yeah, we thought we'd have a bit of a look at Dominaria United Limited, the way the format's shaping out, how we've been going, what our experience has been like, what our records are, all that sort of thing. But before we get into any of that, Stu, it has been a while. Do you remember how to shout out our sponsors?
I think I can shell pretty well.
Go for it.
Yeah, so as always, the Magic Beans podcast and the Magic Beans tournament series is brought to you by Josh and Pat's MTG Bazaar. They are the premier Magic auction site on Facebook, and you can get any card you want any night of the week. You've just got to get on there and get bidding. I actually won some cards this week.
Oh, nice.
I haven't placed an order in a long time, so it felt good to, with a new set coming out, a couple of prime picks. Feels good. But yeah, you can find them at jpmtgbazaar.com.au or search them up on Facebook. And when you win an auction, let them know the Beans sent you.
Very good. All right. So Dominaria United released on Arena last Friday, I think. And
yes. It's been about a week. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it actually releases in paper like tomorrow. I've got my order coming from Gameology. I got the notification to say it's in the post and on its way, and I'm hoping it arrives maybe tomorrow, if not Monday, because if it arrives by then, I'll probably do a pack cracking stream on Monday night.
Will do the cracking, and you'll just show the cards, right? Otherwise, we'll be there for hours.
Depends when the box arrives. If it arrives tomorrow, then yes, probably, but if it arrives Monday, there will unlikely be time for that, so I might just have to fumble my way through opening packs. But on Arena, we don't have that problem. We just click the open all button and away we go. It's all
how good is the
all
open
go.
All button? It doesn't
I'm
matter
so
how many packs you've got now.
So good.
Oh.
Yeah, very, very handy. But when you're playing limited, you don't even have to press those open all buttons. You just jump into the sealed event or the draft and away you go. So yeah, we're going to talk all about that tonight. I think between the three of us, we've been playing a lot of limited over this last week. I haven't played limited on Arena for quite a while. I think the last set I played even just a couple of drafts in was Kamigawa. Didn't play any Streets of New Capenna, so good to get back into it. But Chewy, you've put a ton of work into the show notes this week, which is awesome.
Thanks
to
for
see.
That.
Hopefully it makes sense.
That's brilliant.
Well, I mean, I'm just going to like mute my mic and you're just going to talk for the next hour, so it sounds good.
It's my master plan.
So, yeah, we'll get into that in a minute. I guess sort of right off the bat, how are we finding the format? Like, Chewy, do you think this is a good format? Are you having fun?
I love it. It feels like it's a nostalgia trip. I mean, it's Dominaria. Dominaria's been visited playing, you know, with you know, throughout Magic's history, and that's great. But the reminder text on cards for things like Scry is a pretty good clue to tell us that this is like core set plus. So it's not core set. It's better than core set, but the gameplay and the Magic feels like Magic did, you know, sort of 10 years ago. And I love that because it means it's, you know, defined archetypes, supported archetypes, things that are that draw you into those. Things are fairly evenly balanced. The games are interactive and fun. And, you know, all the things that we love about Limited is here. There's some really interesting and really powerful cards that, you know, draw you into a particular, you know, archetype and or play style. You know, you can just kind of go ham. So I love it. I loved the Kamigawa Limited set. I really, really did. And that was the best Limited set of, you know, the last few years. This, we're only a week in, but this has the potential to be better, I think. Well, to top Kamigawa as my favorite of the last few sets. So subjectively saying this has the potential to be better. What do you think, Stu?
I tend to agree with you, though. Like before this, Kamigawa was easily my favorite drafting experience for, well, I guess since I got into drafting like 3 or 4 years ago. But after a week, I'm having a ton of fun. And admittedly, I probably haven't done as many drafts as I would have liked up to this point. But at every waking moment, it's like, oh, when is there going to be a break in my day to just jump on and do a draft? Like I did a sealed draft at work a couple of days ago. I've never done a draft at work. So
building sealed pools on your phone is interesting.
It's rough.
Hard. Yeah.
It's hard enough on a, you know, 27-inch monitor, let alone on a 6-inch phone or whatever. It's, it's not the best.
You know, I've got a new phone and I had the option to get like the Pixel Plus or just the normal Pixel. And I went, oh, you know what? Like the smaller screen would fit in my pocket better. It'd be easier. I'll go with that. And then literally 2 weeks later, they're like, Arena's coming to mobile. And I'm like, I wish I got the bigger one. But yeah, I'm similar, Sue. Like I go, oh, I'm going to play some games. What do I want to do? Do I want to play some Explorer? Do I want to play a shooter? Do I want to, you know, jump on and play some GeoGuessr or whatever? And it's like, no, I just want to play Dominaria Limited. I'm drawn to it. Yeah. So it's not just that's the thing to do to get your collection up and all the rest of it from a collection management, building things ready to play, you know, the constructed format. Like I legitimately just want to play Limited.
Yeah. And you talk about it being your subjective view that this is as good as it is and whatever. But, and again, this is only a small sample size, but our Limited channel, which always pops off with a new set, I think it's gone to another level this time around.
Oh, it's extra.
I jumped on this afternoon and it's like you know channels are going off when you jump on and it's like, oh, there's 80-something unread messages. You're like, exactly. Oh, man, I'm on Discord all the time and I can't keep up with what's going on this channel. It's awesome. Very, very good to see.
And there's if you're new to Limited, the link to join our Discord will be in the show notes, always is. Check it out. We've got some really experienced Limited players, but they're also super helpful. So, like, put up your pool. How would you build this? And that's something that happens almost daily. And people get together. And some people even, like, chuck that sealed pool into the deck builder on Arena and figure it out for you and then go, this is how I would build it. Like, you just can't get that help anywhere else. So the Magic Beans Discord's place to be. And shameless plug. Sorry, Stu.
All right, so how have you guys been faring in terms of record? Like, you're doing well, you're doing poorly, Stu? I think you said you haven't been having the most successful time.
No, I think I've had probably one of the more successful times.
Oh, okay.
From a sealed perspective, I usually have a terrible time with sealed. I've done three sealed drafts, or four if you include the midweek one.
Yep.
For a record of 7-2, 6-3, 6-3, 3-1. Okay. So I'm feeling pretty good on the sealed side of things. I've done three actual drafts, and I think I've gone 4-3, 4-3, 2-3. So, you know, running at close to 50% there. But again, every game that I've played, and I don't know if it's reflective of my deck building being somewhat okay or just the natural power of the set, every game feels for me really close and really contested, if you know what I mean. Like, it's sort of
There's no real blowouts.
No, at least not when I'm losing. When I lose, I seem to lose close.
Yeah.
But I've had some wins where, and it was only with was one deck earlier today, that I shot out to like a 4-1 sort of record, and the four wins were just, my poor opponents couldn't do a thing. But then it leveled out. The next two games to finish 4-3, it was like, oh, okay, maybe I got ahead of myself.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, I've done two sealed pools and two drafts. I'm in the partway through a current draft, and yeah, I've got five wins in all of them so far. I've got 5-3 in both sealed pools, 5-3 in my first draft, and the draft I'm currently in now, I'm on 5-2. So yeah, doing pretty well. And as you mentioned before, Chewy, like for building your collection and turning gold into gems, it's fantastic. I'd just completely forgotten. I know we've spoken about it in the podcast before, but the like premier draft is 10,000 gold to enter. Once you hit three wins, it turns into 1,000 gems and some packs, and then from there on up, it's just fantastic value. And I think it's similar with the seal pools. You know, it's 2,000 gems to enter, but once you hit three wins, you're at least getting half of that back. And then yeah, if you manage to get the seven wins, you're actually making gems, you know, it's 2,200 gems. So as long as you can have that 50% win record in a draft or a sealed, you're actually not doing too bad. And often you find a lot of people have just gold just left over all over the place. And yeah, turning that into gems that you can use for other things is pretty handy. So get onto it. How's your record been going, Chu?
Oh, sorry.
Pretty good. I have an overall win rate of 69%. So doing pretty well. Yeah, yeah. So I've had a 2-3 and a 3-3, a couple of 5, a couple of 6, and 1-7-1, which I posted on Twitter last night. So a 7-1, pretty good. But yeah, a few 5 and 6-3s where I, you know, just couldn't quite get over the line. But overall, like going really well. So I've done, I'm currently 1-0 in my 7th sealed. But wow. I haven't done a draft yet. That is next on my list once I run out of gems.
Okay. So, yep. Fair enough.
So
have you got enough gems left for the weekend?
Yes. I've got 2,000 plus I'm 1-0 and my deck looks pretty good at the moment. So I should
get some gems back.
Yeah, hopefully. Yeah.
Yep. All right. So I guess like my initial impressions of the format, and you know, we'll delve into this in a bit more depth soon, but the format is definitely as most sets are, and particularly the sort of core set-esque sets, they're generally focused around the two color pairs. So you know, the ten color combinations in pairs. And that, you know, they have their defined archetypes within those pairs and that sort of thing, which Chewy, you and Cracker did a really good job on stream, I think a couple of weeks ago now, sort of breaking down the key uncommons for those. But the big difference in this set is the kicker cards and the domain stuff. So there is just a lot of, you know, red cards with a green kicker and white cards with blue kickers and things like that, that tends to lead you into playing two colors along with a splash for a kicker card or something like that. What I've actually found is every deck just seems to want to be three colors, and particularly in sealed, three colors, and often it's three colors with a splash, or it's you know, two main colors with two splashes. You know, you might have a bomb in an off color, and then a couple of kicker cards in a different off color or something like that. And it's actually, particularly in sealed, it's actually very easy to do that. And my experience seems to be that if you're not doing that, you're missing out. Like you're really sort of not playing all those extra powerful cards that can help sort of take your deck to the next level.
Particularly with the kicker cards, if the splash is for the kicker, not for the card itself, I think that's a really important piece of advice.
Yeah, absolutely.
A lot of the kicker cards are just decent on their own. Like there's the Urborg something that's a 2-mana, give something -2/-2, but if you kick it for blue and one, it gets extra minuses based on instants and sorceries in your graveyard. If you're like, that's still, it kills most 2-drops. Like it's still a good card, but if you've got an off-color dual land for the cost of a land coming into play tapped to be able, that's the only opportunity cost that you've got for that to be kicked. And you can, you know, turn that into, you know, neg four, neg four, and kill something larger for very, very little downside. So I think the set's designed really well in that sense, that it allows for those cards to be, you know, previously we've had kicker cards where like, oh yeah, this is okay, but only if you can kick it. Obviously, cards are better if you can, but they're like entirely playable and just good cards. If they didn't have kicker on them, you'd still put them in your deck.
I think that's been one of the things that I've loved most about it is that, yeah, there's no, for most of those kicker cards, there's no disincentive to actually run them without being able to cast the kicker. But if you can kick them, oh boy, some of these cards are fantastic.
Yeah, a lot of them, I'm finding often they're, you know, it's a two mana creature, but then it has like a two or a three mana kicker, and it might be, you know, you draw a card or you, you know, bounce another creature, or you do, you know, you've got this extra ability. And the format, particularly in sealed, seems to be very slow because everyone's playing five or six tapped lands. And so it's so often it's just, well, I play a tap land, pass turn. You play a tap land, pass turn. I play another tap land at a one drop, pass it to, and you play a tap land at a one drop, and it, and so just like you're just constantly playing slow and behind, which means these creatures that normally you'd go, oh yeah, well, I just want to run that out on turn two and start attacking, they're actually way more valuable to hang on to and play later on in the game, so you can actually
Perfect example of that, Shorty, is Vine Shaper Prodigy, which is a grizzly bear with kicker for blue and one. That card is dumb.
Yeah, that's
so good. So yeah, and that is the perfect example of what you're talking about, I think, because it's you know, it's a grizzly bear. If you want to get aggressive, that's fine. But gee, casting it on turn four is a lot more value.
Honestly, don't think I've attacked with one of those yet. I'm literally just playing it to filter through my deck, and it's so good.
So
good.
All right. So, yeah, we'll have a bit of a look. So, Chewy, you've pulled some data from 17 Lands, which is a fantastic site if you're into limited. That's what the site is focused on, so definitely go and check them out. But you've got here the win percentages for two color plus a splash, which is probably what we're going to see the most. It's what most people are going to play, which is not actually that different to most sets. Like, you do often play, particularly in sealed, you do often play two colors with a light splash, but in this set you are certainly more incentivized to do it, and I think it's probably a bit easier than it normally is with all the dual lands that are floating around. Just the PSA on the dual lands, they go, we were talking about it before we started recording, they're going very early in drafts. So if you're thinking you can just get those, pick up those dual lands for your colors, you know, second last pick sort of thing, nah, they're going to be long gone before then. So keep an eye out on those. But yeah, Chewy, you want to run us through some of these?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you look on 17 Lands, they have the numbers. So this was by and large the most common, by almost double, sets drafted and played, two color plus splash. So we'll have a look at each color combo, and we'll kind of talk about what it's trying to achieve, like its game plan, and just point out a couple of cards along the way, the best, you know, common and uncommon in each color, and then the gold card that you kind of look for to make that deck tick. We'll only really talk about commons and uncommons, like rares and mythics. You know, they're so rare that you get them. They're great if you do, but yeah, you, and they might pull you into a color, but, you know, they're not the sort of the bread and butter of the deck. And in the first week, you know, we've seen some, you know, interesting, fun archetypes like Domain Aggro and the Walls decks sort of emerge. So we won't focus on them specifically, but we'll talk to them as we get to their color combinations. And just a bit of a disclaimer here, when I talk about some of the gold cards, there'll be kicker cards in that category, and similar to what we were talking about before. So some of the unkicked cards, you know, if it's a Talarian Geyser, in some decks that's going to be Geezer. Yeah, that's going to be an important card in the blue-red spells deck, but it's also a gold card in the, you know, in the blue-white deck in that sense. So treat them like a gold card because you really want them to be kicked in that archetype, whereas they're just it's just a blue card in other decks that want that. And it's kind of, yeah, what we were talking about before. So I thought we'd just, yeah, in no particular order of, like, power or anything, these are just the ways that these came out of my head onto our Google document. But, yeah, we'll talk about Azorius. So I guess it feels like old school blue-white flyers, which I love. You know, you've got big body blockers on the ground. You've got flyers in the air, and that's your main avenue to victory. Some tempo play. There's also, with the overlap with the blue-red spells deck, there's a bit of a spells matter, which, you know, makes your tempo plays, your bounce spells and your counter magic and things, you know, a little bit better. So we've got a couple of good cards here. So Stu, what's the first key card here?
The first key card of blue-white flyers. See, I'm liking the look of it's a Talus Lookout, which is the 3-2 for 2 and blue-blue. It's a flyer, and when Talus Lookout dies, look at the top two cards of your library, put one of them into your hand and the other into your graveyard.
Yeah, this card's great.
It's just like, yeah, I'm happy to play this, and I'm more than happy for it to die so that I can find something better.
Well, this card's all upside, right? So, like, 4-mana 3-2 flyer playable. You know, we've seen, like, Snapping Drakes and things like that always, you know, kind of be a staple in this type of archetype. But if they don't kill it, you get to attack for 3 every turn. If they do, it replaces itself with some selection. So I think that's pretty sweet. Shorty, what jumps out to you in blue-white?
Yeah, we've got the Wingmantle Chaplain, which is 4-mana. I haven't actually played or seen this one played, but reading through the text, looks pretty solid. A 4-mana 0-3 with Defender. When it enters the battlefield, you're creating a bird. For each creature with Defender you control, and I think you mentioned before, there is a walls sub theme that sort of is woven through this set. So there's plenty of creatures getting around with Defender, which is odd, but then there is a few Defender payoffs. So yeah, it's not that uncommon to see a few Defenders end up in your deck, but at a minimum you're getting 4-mana for an 0-3 wall, and you're getting the 1-1 bird because it counts itself. And then whenever another creature with Defender enters the battlefield under your control, you create another one. So it's not hard to sort of gum up the ground, as you said, Chewy. You know, you've got your big blockers on the ground, and then you're sort of flying over the top,
yeah,
with various birds and different things. You know, things like the Talus Lookout to get in there and start attacking. And you know, people don't like blocking your tokens, and they don't like blocking your Talus Lookouts because you're just sort of getting value off it. So it's not a bad start.
Well, interestingly, after a week, Wingmantle Chaplain is the most winningest card on 17 lands. So
really?
Okay. Yeah. Yep. So obviously the combination of the blue-white flyers deck and the popularity of the Defenders deck have bumped it up. And yeah, it's pretty solid.
It's pretty busted for an uncommon.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's great. Another really important card is an instant take up the shield. And this is, you're often in a racing situation in the Flyers deck where you know, hoping that your blocker's on the ground and you know, you've got smaller bodies in the air, right? Like, part of being flying is you generally, you know, they're smaller creatures. Take up the shield, but pumping and giving you lifelink until end of turn is a great thing to do. Not perhaps on your flyer to get in that extra damage, but most often to just line up a really good block and a blowout on the ground where you can kill a really good creature that your defender may not have been able to do, and as well as gain a bunch of life. So take up the shield for any white deck, really, but definitely a deck that wants to race, like the Flyers deck, is a really important card to have. You want to have at least one of those in your list.
Yeah, and if you are playing blue-white, then, yeah, one of the key multicolor cards that you definitely want to be throwing in your deck is the Talarian Geezer.
Yeah.
Because it just does such a good job. It's bouncing, you know, the blockers out of the way and drawing you a card, so it's replacing itself no matter what. And if you get to kick it, you're gaining that extra life. So it's just fits in exactly with what you're trying to do in that deck. So
absolutely.
Runs really well.
Absolutely. And it is a spell, and it is the life gain for the racing, and it's a finding it with the impulse is really important as well. So it's funny, the impulse, you know, we've had anticipate in limited formats and they haven't been great, but impulse is that one card deeper just does such a massive difference. And with anything that, you know, triggers off a spell being cast, which, you know, you'll have blue cards that do that, or just digging for that land or that removal spell or that threat, impulse does a great job of that. Yep. So blue white flyers, really fun archetype. I enjoy it. What's next? Dimir. What's Dimir trying to do, Stu?
So we're looking to be a bit more grindy, a bit more controlling. You want to try and get a hold of as much removal as you can, and just, you know, keep churning through and playing some, you know, a bit of graveyard recursion and things like that where you can. And, you know, we look at sort of you want good, strong defensive bodies, and then ultimately you want to draw some cards.
Oh, yeah.
So I've actually found myself drawn to blue-black X decks quite a bit this set already, and I'm thoroughly enjoying it. I think one of my favorite cards out of it, and again, it's one that you know play in any deck, is the Rhino's Vortex, which is one of the kicker cards. Big fan so far of that card. I think it does a lot of work when you can kick it.
Yeah, and yeah,
I've been playing that even when you can't kick it.
Yeah, it's great for that as well, for one blue, but for a kicker of black and two, you get to return target creature or planeswalker you don't control to its owner's hand. And if it's kicked, you can put it on the bottom of their library instead, which is fantastic.
And if I highly recommend, if you've got a Rhona's Vortex, pick up a Micromancer for your deck, because a 4-mana 3/3, it's a good defensive body, and it's going to... go and find your Rhona's Vortex or your cut down, like that cheap removal. So the aggressive red base decks can get underneath you. There's not many sweepers in the format, which is great.
No, there isn't.
There's one at rare, and then there's the Hissing Miasma. But yeah, so having cut down just to be able to kill a 2 or 3 drop is great. So Micromancer will let you double spell. It'll be able to trade with something, so you're getting that card advantage. So I think that's really, really good. You know, it finds your key removal in either your Rhona's Vortex or cut down. What else is here, Shorty? You played a few Essence Scatters in your time, I assume, Shorty?
Yeah. I think Essence Scatter is, I mean, it fits in with a bunch of different decks in this format. You know, you play it in the blue white flyers, you can play it in your blue red, play it in your blue green or blue black. Doesn't matter what you're doing. Having one Essence Scatter in any blue deck where you can consistently have access to blue mana, you're not going to play it as a splash, but if blue is one of your main colors, one Essence Scatter is definitely a way to go, generally as a rule of thumb, particularly in sealed. In draft, it sort of depends on the format, but sealed, definitely, like, everyone's playing creatures and you're always going to find an opportunity to snipe something. And, you know, especially in sealed, that everyone's playing towards their big fatty bombs, you know, at the end of the game. So having an Essence Scatter up just to, you know, spoil someone's plans is always good.
It's a blue Doomblade, right?
Yeah, pretty much. Yep. Extinguish the Light is a solid removal spell in black. It's a little bit expensive and it's a bit hard to splash. I've seen them getting passed around a bit in draft sort of later on. Just obviously people are not willing to go for the double black spell. So two black instant destroy target creature or planeswalker. If its mana value was 3 or less, you gain 3 life. So common removal that's just hard removal is certainly good. But yeah, being black makes it a little bit harder to splash. So and what was the one that you said? Is it Hissing Miasma? That's the -2/-2 one?
Yeah, but it's got the kicker that puts a counter on a creature. So, you know, so it's a sideboard card, really. But there's not that many there's not that many sweepers, so if you've got one in your blue black deck, may not be the end of the world. A card that, you know, when Cracker and I did the evaluation on, we were a bit unsure of until Cracker said, hey, it's a 2-mana looter, is Vohar the Voldarion Desecrator. That card is gas. So, like, just looting away excess lands or just digging to your key pieces. And I was a Sultai list in my 7-1 last night that had a copy of OHA, and I just smoothed out my draws, and on the turn that I won, I was able to end step, cast Extinguish the Light, untap, loot, then use the other ability on Voha to then recast my Extinguish the Light. So I'd killed their two best creatures, which let me attack for lethal. So it was, that's how good the card is. Like, it literally wins you games. Yeah. So I really, really like that.
So nowhere near as good as that, but a card that I did find that's sneakily good, especially if you're playing a more controlling deck, is the Tidepool Turtle. It's like a defensive turtle, but it doesn't have defender. Have you seen that card? I think it's a 2/5.
And yeah,
it costs four, but it's pay 3, scry 1. So when you're playing in a late game, it's a good way to try and filter through.
I've played that in a blue-white flyers build. I haven't played it in the blue-black, but yeah, that's the sort of body you want on the ground when you're playing the Azorius deck. But yeah, it's a good way to not die, which is great. Yeah. Yep. What's the next color combination, Shorty? Selesnya.
Yeah, Selesnya. I haven't seen a ton of it in the games I've played, but I've certainly seen people posting this in our Discord. It's the sort of go wide token generation, bit of +1/+1 counters, that sort of thing. You know, go wide and then pump your team up. If you can get the cards that allow you to go wide, you've got, what's it called? Captain's Call, the 4-mana sorcery.
That makes that 3 tokens.
3 tokens. 3-1 ones. That's pretty solid. It would be fantastic if it was instant speed, but unfortunately it's a sorcery. Pretty good to get you wide. And then you've got various spells that that allow you to pump your team, or creatures that allow you to pump your team. Not a bad archetype. Obviously, you know, if your opponent does have a Hissing Miasma or something like that, that's
yeah, bad, that makes you
bad
sad
news for you. but yeah, not a bad color combination. You've got green white. You've got, you know, cards like Bite Down, which is a bite punch, however they want to say it. The one where just your creature deals damage to another creature, so it's not a fight card. And then there is, what's the fight one that's in this set?
Tail Swipe or something.
Yeah. I think it's single green, but if you play it in your main phase, your creature gets +1/+1.
+1/+1.
Something like that. So a couple of, you know, that's the removal that you get in green. And then white, you've got a bunch of combat tricks and things like that. There's one of the multicolored cards, Strength of the Coalition, which is a single green. Target creature you control gets +2/+2 until end of turn. And then it's got a kicker of 2 and a white. If it was kicked, put a +1/+1 counter on each creature you control. So yeah, certainly ties in with that go wide strategy. So yeah, you can certainly get some blowouts. What else are you seeing that is powerful in this archetype, Chu?
So at common, definitely something you'll pick up, and you know, on face value, you're not super excited, but it plays quite well, is the Charismatic Vanguard. It's a 3-mana 3/2, which are traditionally pretty average, but it's got an activated ability of 5. So 4 and a white, and creatures you control get +1/+1 until end of turn. It just lets you just attacking. You can use it defensively, and then it just lets you throw tokens at people's face. So when you've gone wide, those tokens become, they're 1/1s, making them 2/2s, or they may be pumped up by other +1 counter effects. It is a really good way to, just have that alpha strike. And then there's also, the gold cards. You've mentioned Strength of the Coalition. Queen Alanol. We weren't super excited about this deck because it's kind of just keyword big, but the second paragraph on here, the second clause of, if you make a token, you get that many +1. It just helps you go wide and is just a big giant thing. So sometimes
Chatterfang.
Yeah, it does. It does. So sometimes the payoff cards in the green white decks can be a bit of a lightning rod. But, so she's just big, but she's a powerful thing. If you get to get a couple of extra tokens off her, especially if you've got any sort of anthem effect, she's going to get very, very big, but also your board's going to get very, very wide. So she gives you the ability to go a little bit tall as well as wide, which is a good way to be defensive. She gums up the ground really well, which makes people not want to attack in where normally, you're forced to throw a token in front of their best creature. This gives you the option of, building your board that bit wider, which is great. Yep. The next list is Boros. And who would have thunk it? It's an aggro deck. So yeah, lots of two drops, and the combat tricks that are available, such as take up the shield and things like that, play really well with the enlist mechanic.
So enlist, take us through enlist again. That's where
you can when you attack, you can
tap another
non-summoning sink.
And add its
power.
And then, importantly, it is just its power. I've made that mistake, I think, three times, where I've just assumed that it was
power and toughness,
and it's like just combining the creatures, and it's like, oh, yep, swing in with this dude and enlist this one. Oh, hang on, no, my guy's still a 3/2.
Yeah.
You've got a 2/2, and okay, you're just gonna block. Okay, whoops.
So what I found is that for that exact reason, Furious Bellow, which is one in a red instant, target creature gets +3/+0 and first strike. And it's also got Scry 1 tacked onto it. If you're attacking with a 4/2, and they're just going to put, a 2-power creature in front of it, Furious Bellow lets you, save your creature and, deal a lot of damage to them, even lets it trade up, which is great. So it's an important combat trick to have in that archetype. What are some of the creatures we want to see in here, guys?
I haven't played Boros itself, but I've played a few of these creatures in other like multicolored decks, that sort of thing. And like two of the common white creatures have sort of really overperformed me or done really well. Like there's Argivian Cavalier.
Argivian?
Oh. Whatever. Yeah, one of those. two and a white for a 2/2 that's got enlist, as we said, but when it enters the battlefield, you create a 1/1 white soldier creature tokens. This is 100% the creature that I've attacked in using the 1/1 white soldier to enlist, and it makes my dude a 3/2 and dies to a 2/2 on the other side of the field, but it's a 3-mana, 3 power and toughness spread across 2 bodies, and just having that enlist option is pretty nice.
Yeah.
And then one that's done very well, actually, this one's an uncommon, but the Knight of Dawn's Light, which is a 1 and a white, 2/2 with first strike. So 2/2 with first strike actually is surprisingly good. It's just attacking in a lot of the time, or it's creating a defensive wall. It's got, if you would gain life, you gain that much life +1 instead. Meh, whatever. That's whatever. But it's got 1 and a white, pump it, gets +1/+1 till end of turn. So I've had quite a few situations where this thing is holding off like a 5/5 creature from attacking in, because it's like, well, you can attack in, but I've got a 2/2 first strike that I can pump big enough to kill your dude. So
yeah, the threat of activation is significant.
Yeah, yep.
And
yep. Or you attack in and it's like, well, you can block it if you want. And then if they don't block, it's like, okay, well, you can just take 2 and then I'll play another creature. And yeah, that exactly like you said, Chewy, threat of activation.
Yeah, absolutely. And a card that kind of flew under the radar in, preview season, but it's played really well, I've died to this card, is the Keldon Strike Team. So it's two and a red for a 3/1, which I'm not normally excited by, but it's got kicker for 1 and a white. When it enters the battlefield, if it was kicked, create 2 1/1 soldier creature tokens. And as long as it enters the battlefield this turn, creatures you control have haste. So
yeah,
it
this
just
card's solid.
5 mana, 5 power onto the board with haste, and it is a great sort of top end in your aggressive deck. So think of it, it's a 5-mana card, not a 3-mana card.
I was going to say, the big thing to remember with this card is whether you kick it or not, it still has haste, and it's still giving your other creatures haste. So obviously, you can just play this as a 3-mana 3/1 with haste. Yeah, because it gives itself haste. But also, because it's giving other creatures haste, you can potentially use this as an enlisting card, or use another creature to enlist, or use the 2 tokens that it creates to enlist. So, having 3 power and having haste, if you've got the, Argivian Cavalier or whatever, another creature with enlist, you can just play this dude and use its 3 power to add on to another creature as well. So, but yeah, often I found as well, I'm casting it for 5 mana and just punching in for a ton of damage out of nowhere. It works quite well.
Yeah, absolutely. I really like it. And the other uncommon multicolored card is Tori D'Avenant. I think I pronounced that incorrectly. Pretty sure it's incorrect. But yeah, the Fury Rider. It's so 1 double red and a white for a 3/3. So a bit of a prohibitive casting cost. But she's a human knight with vigilance and trample. When she attacks, all other attacking creatures you control get +1/+1 until end of turn. Red creatures get trample and untap white creatures. So, it's a great, sort of, again, top end big finisher. So you've created a lot of tokens along the way with your cavaliers and things like that. And then you just, yeah, make everybody bigger and get in some massive attacks, which is great. And of course, like, you want lightning strikes. Any deck with mountains in it just wants lightning strike. But
yeah,
it's
you're just playing that, yeah, no matter what. Doesn't matter, yeah, what deck it's in. But yeah, yeah, it goes very well in this deck and definitely goes well in the next deck we'll talk about. But yeah, if you are playing red-white, if you can get a Tory, like, yeah, it's solid. It's just doing every single thing that you want to be doing in a red-white deck. So yeah, the next list is next color pair is it?
Is it really?
Which I'm actually, this is the one that I drafted, and I'm still in the, I'm currently sitting at 5-2 on. I actually didn't rate the deck. I don't know how I've managed to get to five wins. It just didn't feel powerful. I don't have the right combination of spells and creatures or whatever. But anyway, so this is this is more the spells matters archetype for, you know, similar to the white blue. But yeah, Chu, you've got it. It feels like one of the best sets for supporting this archetype in recent memory. Which
I always want blue red spells to be good. And
so do I.
Yeah, and we got, what was the set that had, like, it was like a flying brain or something, and it was like, oh, look at this awesome blue red spells, but the deck just wasn't good. Like, there was a good card, but this feels like the archetype's really, really well supported, and it feels really powerful. You know, it's got some versatility, and the first card that, you know, straight away I had to put on the list is an uncommon electrostatic infantry. It's a dwarf wizard, 2 mana, 1 and a red for a 1/2 with trample, which sounds weird, but it says whenever you cast an instant or sorcery spell, put a +1/+1 counter on it. So not just +1 until end of turn, actually gets a counter, so it gets bigger and bigger, and, you know, that trample becomes very relevant. So this is such an incredible 2-drop. This is a first pickable card, in my opinion, and yep, it is very, very good. There's another 2-drop here, Stu, that I've called out, but it's kind of, this is one of those versatile cards where it is a 2-drop, but it isn't, right?
That's the Gitu Amplifier?
Yeah, that's the one.
So it's another one of those ones, yep. Cost 2, it's a 1-2 wizard with the kicker of blue and 2. And so when he enters the battlefield, if it was kicked, return target creature and opponent controls to its owner's hand. Whenever you cast an instant or sorcery spell, Gitu Amplifier gets +2/+0 until end of turn.
Yeah, so
that's
this
a pretty good card.
It's great on turn 2. It's even better on turn 5. So
better on turn 5.
Yeah, it doesn't matter what, you know, you need a 2-drop. Right, so playing this on 2 is fine, but if you normally, you know, aggressive 2-drops, if you draw them on turn 5, they're not good anymore. Like, their time to shine has passed, and you play them because they're a body, but you'd rather them be a more impactful spell. This does both. So this is a really important card, and this is an example of what I mean, where this archetype is really well supported. This reminds me of Ogre Savant, Shorty, from original Ravnica, where he's a 5-mana 3/2 ogre, but if you spent blue to cast him, he bounced something. So this plays sort of a similar role. So just bounce their best card, let your team bash in, and then it's a threat next turn, which is just amazing. So I like it. Talk about some blue cards for us, Shorty.
There's a couple of, like, Talarian cards. There's Talarian Terror, so going with the blue-red spells theme, Talarian Terror is 6-mana, 5/5. It costs 1 less for each instant and sorcery card in your graveyard, and it has Ward 2. I've played a couple of these. I'm finding that the Ward 2 is just irrelevant. Like, it's not hard for your opponents to have removal and have two mana. By the time you're casting this thing in Limited, you're not, you know, casting it on turn 2 or anything like that. So that doesn't seem to have a huge impact. Lightning Strike is definitely something you want to play. The card we mentioned earlier in the Blue Whites list, the Talarian Geezer, runs really well in this list, even if you can or can't kick it. And then Timely Interference, which is a single blue instant, target creature gets -1/-0 till end of turn. If it was kicked, which is one and a red, that creature blocks this turn if able, and then it's draw a card. So, like, worst case, I've actually cast this a couple of times just on my own creature, just, like, end of opponent's turn, just to cycle it. Like, it's this blue mana cycle. So the kicker side of it, I haven't actually found that to be useful. You can sort of force people to block a creature so that you know, sort of works as a removal, but I haven't really found that that's come up yet.
No, it's more about a cheap blue spell that replaces itself.
Yeah, it's a cheap blue spell. Yeah, that replaces itself and just triggers your Gitu Amplifier. Your uncommon multicolor card in this color pair is the blue and a red for a 1/3 flyer that gets +1/+0 and trample when you... all creatures you control get +1/+0 and gain trample when you cast an instant or sorcery. So the thing I've found with my list of this one is... I don't have, you know, I've got like one of these Balmors, a couple of Gitu Amplifiers, one Electrostatic Infantry, and then I'm just playing just some other random creatures just to have enough creatures. And I, like, you really want multiples of each of these, and that's it for your creatures, and then just a bunch of Lightning Strikes and Timely Interference and that sort of stuff, so you can sort of really go off. And I find that's hard in, it's very hard in Sealed, and it's quite hard to get in.
You sound like a constructed player who's playing some Limited there, Shorty.
Like, it's just one of those decks that needs that.
You need those payoffs. Like, it's a synergy deck, and, right? Yeah.
And the thing I'm finding hard with it is a lot of these, the instants and sorceries that you want, just go in every other deck that can cast them, so you're fighting everybody for those spells. It very much is a synergy deck, so
yeah,
if absolutely. You can get there, it's awesome, but it sometimes it just doesn't pan out. So
I'm going to talk about Simic next, which has been a really powerful color pair over the last couple of years, but this is kind of like Simic is your base, and then you have all of the domain cards, basically. So you might have four or five colors, but you're a blue-green base. There's, you know, mid-range control and even domain aggro decks out there. I wouldn't recommend going straight blue-green. There's just not enough, good cards and things. You know, you want the color fixing and ramp that you get from Simic to be an enabler for your bigger, more expensive and often multicolored cards. So the first card here that I've called out is Frost Fist Strider, which is difficult to say, but this is an uncommon. It's a 3/2 blue, so 5 mana for a 4/4 Elemental Giant Ward 2. When it enters the battlefield, target creature your opponent controls, put a stun counter on it. So what I've found with this is the domain, because you've got a lot of tap lands and you've got a bit of setup to set up your domain stuff, you need a catch-up mechanism, and tapping down their best creature and adding a 4/4 on turn 4 often with the ramp that you have is really, really important. So this card is not the most exciting card, but it's a really, really important one in your deck. So because it's a bit of a time walk at times and stops those particularly aggressive decks from getting underneath you. So definitely wanted to call that one out. What jumps out at you, Stu?
So I think from the green side of things, the Sunbathing Root Waller, which really plays into the domain mechanic. And being able to, which obviously incentivizes you to go for more than two colors. Like, honestly, you really want to try and get three or four at a minimum to really hose your opponents with a big 5/5 or 6/6 lizard.
Yeah, this is it's a good defensive creature and a really important card for the.
I really like it, and it plays in well with some of your Gaia's Mites and things like that to give it a bit more on top of that as well when. Everybody seems to be playing some sort of combat trick, so you just need to play one back in return.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it kind of goes off.
I shared a screenshot of a deck that I'm playing, Shorty. It's got Tatiova, Steward of Tides, in there. You're a fan of that card?
Yeah, that card's solid. Yeah, 3 mana, 3/3 land creatures you control have flying, and whenever a land enters the battlefield under your control, if you've got 7 or more lands, you... turn a land into a 3/3 with haste, and because you've still got Tatiova on the field, it's a 3/3 with haste that has flying, so, and that's permanent. Like, if Tatiova dies, it's still a 3/3, so yeah, it's a very solid. I played a deck that had two of these. I killed one. It's like, yeah, get rid of that thing before you get your seven lands. And then they played another one and dropped the land and started making flying land. So yeah, that was pretty rough. A card that we shouted out sort of pre-recording, Vine Shaper Prodigy. Chewy, you're a big fan of this one.
This card's gas. Like this might be the best green common. It's a grizzly bear that has kicker, and you can look at the top three cards of your library, put one into your hand and the rest on the bottom. It is a very, very good card in limited. I really do like it. Not on the list, it's a bit of an obvious one, but Joint Exploration is also
a card.
Yeah, a really important card for these decks.
So that's another kicker. The O2 wall that looks at the top six and finds a land. That's very good as well. Because, yeah, as you said, these green Simic-based decks, you are often playing four or five colours. So any of those things that let you dig or go and find a land or whatever is working very well for you.
Absolutely. So from Simic to Rakdos, what do you think of this one, Stu?
Honestly, haven't seen a lot of Rakdos in any sealed or drafts that I've done. I haven't ended up in this archetype myself. But there's a couple of cards here which kind of stand out, and I have actually played this card in Knight of Dusk's Shadow.
This card seems really good.
And it is. It's a 2-2 for 2 with menace. Your opponents can't gain life, which is, you know, like, not that there's a lot of life gain strategies, but the incidental life gain can make a huge difference. So being able to shut that off is really great. And for one and a black, Knight of Dusk's Shadow gets +1/+1 until end of turn. So it's a really good card. There's a lot of really good two drops in this set, I've found.
Yeah, I really like that. A lot of the two drops either have abilities or they scale into the late game really well, either having kicker activated abilities, which is great. There's a bit of a theme in the cards that I've called out in this Rakdos section. It's cards that have the ability to replace themselves or loot. So I'll put Goblin Picker and Phyrexian Rager kind of in the same category. So Goblin Picker is a 2-mana 2/2 that you can rummage. So it lets you just discard, you know, lands in the late game when you're trying to be aggressive and trying to find some action. And Phyrexian Rager, classic card, it's been around forever. 3-mana 2/2 that draws a card and you lose a life, but it's a body and a card. So it's two cards in your mid-range or aggressive red-black deck, which is really, really good. But the power of this deck is really around the uncommons, I think. So tell us about Garner, Fist of Keld. Shorty?
Yeah, so there's the two multicolor uncommons, and yeah, they kind of pair together. So Garner is a 4-mana 4/3. Whenever another creature you control dies, draw a card if it was attacking. Otherwise, it deals one damage to each opponent. And then if you can pair that with Lagomos, who I slashed into a deck a couple of days ago, it's a 3-mana 1/3. At the beginning of combat on your turn, create a 2/1 red elemental creature token with trample and haste. Sacrifice it at the beginning of the next end step. And it's also got tap, search your library for a card, put it into your hand, then shuffle. Activate only if 5 or more creatures die this turn. So that's unlikely to crop up. But yeah, if you can make a 2-1 trample haste every turn and just send it in, either your opponent's going to take the 2 or they're going to block it and it dies. And then if you've got a Garner, well, then you're drawing a card because it died while it was attacking. So pairing those together works quite well. And then you've got the red with the black kicker. What's it called?
Enthrall of the Pit.
Treason. Yeah. Yep, that's the one. Yeah, works quite well in this deck as well. So I haven't seen a ton of just straight Rakdos, but yeah, you sort of see these cards floating around and they pop up as splashes in decks every now and then.
Cool. The next one on our list is Golgari, which is just grindy graveyard things, everything that you expect from Golgari decks. Its card advantage engine is the graveyard, and it wants to play long. Like, this will be the games that go the longest. It is just absolutely the rock. So there's a couple of cards here in the Weatherseed Treaty, because you've got some ways to bring permanents back from the graveyard. So sagas are really good, and this saga at uncommon is really good. So it ramps you, it creates a 1/1, and then it, you know, makes something large. So it's just a good card, especially if you can use it multiple times in a game. And you just want like a beater a really important card. And just, you know, whilst you're spending time and mana doing graveyard things, having a 4-mana 4/4 with reach in Magnigoth Sentry is really, really important as well. But talk to us about some black cards, Shorty.
Yeah, Urborg Reposition, black card, but I guess it's multi. This card has been pretty solid. It's a single black for a sorcery, return target creature card from your graveyard to your hand. You gain 2 life. So sure, sounds good as it is, especially if you're just dumping your creatures in your graveyard through various self-mill means. And it's got kicker for 1 and a green. If the spell was kicked, return another target permanent card from your graveyard to your hand. So for 3 mana, you can get a creature, you can get 2 creatures, you can get a creature and a saga. You know, the Weatherseed Treaty is a card that you're sort of using to fetch up your lands. So, you know, eventually that's going to end up in your graveyard, and you're gaining 2 life as well. Seems pretty solid in this sort of green strategy. And then Shadow Prophecy, which is 2 and a black for an instant. Look at the top X cards of your library, where X is the number of basic land cards. Land types among lands you control, put up to 2 of them into your hand and the rest into your graveyard. You lose 2 life. So, yeah, if you're just playing straight green-black, it's look at the top 2 cards of your library and put them into your hand. You lose 2 life. So we've seen that before. The 3 mana, lose 2 life, draw 2 cards. That seems fine. But if you're, you know, playing 3 or 4 colors, then you might be able to dig deep. And then the big thing is that they're going into your graveyard if you're not putting them into your hand. So, yeah, you put what you want into your graveyard and then bring them back when you want to. There's a multicolor card here, Stu, that have you come up against this one? This has ruined my game.
I have cast this card. In fact, okay. I have cast an Urborg's Repossession, like you mentioned before, to bring back a Bortook from my graveyard to my hand.
Oh, that's nice. Amazing.
So it was mentioned in the limited channel earlier. It was like, oh, that's disgusting. I'm like, yes, it is, and I've done it. So Bortook is a 4-4 for 4 black-green with domain, and when he enters the battlefield, if you cast it, choose target creature card in your graveyard. Return that card to the battlefield if its mana value is less than or equal to the number of basic land types among lands you control, otherwise put it into your hand. So, you know, playing this and bringing another creature down, and generally you've got heaps of stuff in there to bring back and some value at 4 mana or less. So,
yeah, absolutely. Or, you know, depending. Even 3 mana, you know, you're still going to get something. So it's
I did bring a Taddy over back in one of my decks to then play another land and then make another flyer. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's good. Exactly. That's a good representation of how powerful this thing is. And speaking of powerful, Writhing Necromass.
What a card.
Yeah. So it's 6 and a black for a 5/5 with Death Touch, but it costs 1 cheaper for each creature card in your graveyard. So, you know, you can cast this for 4 or 5 mana pretty regularly. So, you know, 4 mana, 5/5 Death Touch. Yeah, sign me up. That sounds amazing. So I think this is, an important card to have in that archetype.
What I like about this card is you cast it pretty early because, you know, you're feeding your graveyard and people want to kill it really quick. But there's like a Goyf or whatever that's power and toughness is equal to the highest mana.
Oh yeah, that's a rare.
Permanent
I think.
In your is it? Oh, is that a rare? Oh,
that's yeah, but I mean, like they play pretty
I
well together.
I thought that was uncommon, but yeah, because then on the subsequent turn, because I think it only costs like 4 mana, you throw out a 7/7. Like,
yeah, it's pretty good. It's pretty good. Whizzing through these last couple because Gruul decks are something that I haven't seen a lot of. It's a bit more mid rangey than the other aggressive. Like Boros deck and leans into some of the domain payoffs. The removal that you really need in the Boros deck is less important. Removal's always important, but it's less important just because you've got bigger bodies. I found that this can be, you know, that it doesn't get under the control decks as well. So that typical mid-range problem. So there's a few cards that wanted to sort of point out here. There's the Magnigoth Sentry, which we spoke about. Basically, green decks want 4 mana 4/4s, so we don't need to spend too much time on that one. But the Flowstone Carver at common, I've found, plays really, really well. So it's 2 and a red for a 2/3 with menace, and it's got pay a red, and it gets +1/-1 until end of turn. So what this does is force through damage, and when they double block it, you can sink some mana into it and kill both of the creatures. So it it's a good red aggressive card in that sense that, you know, they're not just going to throw two twos in front of it and keep one. They're going to lose both. So I found this this card puts your opponent in awkward positions. What else we got here, Shorty?
There's a bunch of good uncommons that I've actually found not like get played often in multicolor decks, not particularly the, as you said, I haven't seen a ton of the Gruul deck itself, but Sprouting Goblin, a 2-mana 2/2 that you can kick for a green, and then you go and get a land with a basic land type, so it does get your dual lands. It only goes into your hand, so it's not actually ramping you. And then it's
Civic Wayfinder red, plus.
Yeah. Red tap, sack a land, draw a card. So, you know, something to do in the late game. Yavimaya Iconoclast is, I've played this a few times and just sort of blow people out with this. It's one and a green for a 3/2 with trample. That's perfectly fine on its own in an aggressive deck. And then it's got kicker for just a single red, so it makes it 3 mana in total. And when it enters the battlefield, if it was kicked, it gets +1/+1 and gains haste till end of turn. So you can just, out of nowhere, 3 mana, 4/3 trample haste is pretty nice. Then you've got Balduvian Berserker, which is 2 and a red for a 1/3 with enlist. And when it dies, it deals damage equal to its power to any target. So this is a good one to, you know, pump up with another creature to make it bigger and just sort of tempt your opponent and go, well, okay, you can block it if you want. You know, my dude's now a 3/3, but if you block it with a 4/4 and you kill my dude, well, now I'm dealing 3 damage to something else. So
yeah, lets it trade up in mana, or it's a potential 2-for-1, which yep. You know, in a red creature is amazing. But you know, the best card to pump up is Rada Coalition Warlord, 2
yep.
red green for a 3/3 with domain. When Rada becomes tapped, another target creature gets +X/+X until end of turn, where X is the number of basic land types amongst lands you control. So, you know, even if it's just 2/2 on the Berserker, but it's, you know, quite often a 3/3, 3/0, you know, that thing's attacking as a 4/3. It's going to be hard to block. They're going to have to put multiple things in front of it. You're going to get multiple cards out of it for the cost of tapping your Rada. So it's really, really powerful. I like it. And the sort of the Simic cards that we spoke about and then the Gruul cards that we spoke about sort of overlap into that domain aggro card with the, you know, the centuries, the berserkers, and the iconoclast, etc., all playing really, really well together.
Yeah, there's also a 4-mana 3 and a red 3/4 with trample that has enlist that,
yes.
that sort of runs really well in that deck as well. So
yeah, and there's a 5-mana 4/4 that goes face equal to domain when it comes into play.
Meria's something.
Yeah, so
yeah, that's, I've won a few games yeah. just dropping that down late game and
yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
doming your opponent for 3 or 4.
Just yeah, I mean, you play a 5-mana 4/4 anyway, and then if it's it gives your deck reach, which is great. And we've gone through 9 color combinations, Stu. What is our last one?
So our last one is Orzhov, which is I'm currently playing this at the moment on 1/0 with a similar sort of build. It's a very much a go wide mid rangey deck with, you know, you want to do some sack in for some good gains, and yeah, you're building around a lot of synergies, and I think it I think it's really good, and it probably relies on some payoffs to really really make it work. You know,
the payoffs are good though, right?
The payoffs are good. So we've got we'll start with the gold cards here. We've got the Elas Ilkor Sadistic Pilgrim, and he's a 2/2 for white and a black with death touch, and whenever another creature enters the battlefield under your control, you gain 1 life, and whenever another creature you control dies, each opponent loses 1 life. So, you know.
So good.
So good. It's just constantly putting you ahead. It's like, yep, I will make some tokens, and I will gain some life. I will get sack some tokens or just whatever, and you can lose some life. Like, it's just fantastic. Which runs into Aron.
Yeah, Benalia's Ruin. Yes, Kraken and I talked about this on the stream, and this card,
yeah.
This card's bomb is bonkers. Have you cast this yet?
I have.
How did it go for you?
Very well. Very well, thank you. If you cast it and have it land and start sacrificing creatures, you just, it gets bonkers. You get wide, you get tall, and if you've got this in play along with the Elas Ilkor, you just kind of, just doing your own thing, really.
Yeah, absolutely. A card that I really, really like, it's one of my favorite white cards, but it's a it does have kick out, is Phyrexian Missionary. So it's one and a white for a 2/3 with lifelink, but it's got kicker for one and a black. When it enters the battlefield, if it was kicked, return target creature from your graveyard to your hand. So it is just an amazing card to, you know, play it on turn 2, defensive 2-drop, it's great. But, you know, if you're sacrificing some creatures to Aeron, etc., you know, particularly things with enters the battlefield effects like your Phyrexian Rages, buying them back with the Missionary feels really, really good. It's just like grindfest card advantage, which is super cool.
Yeah, and it's trying so hard to find one when I was drafting this deck, but I couldn't get one.
Yeah, I had one of my 6/3s was with a black white base. No, I think it was straight black white. And yeah, I had one of these. It was amazing. Shorty, have you cast Phyrexian Warhorse yet?
No, I haven't, but it is certainly a solid card, especially in this deck, which is, yeah, 3 and a black for a 3/3 that has a kicker of a single white, so you can, yeah, pay it for 5 mana, and when it enters the battlefield, if it was kicked, create a 1/1 white soldier creature token, and then, yeah, the sort of the big ability that's going hand-in-hand with what you're trying to do in this archetype is single mana, sacrifice another creature, Phyrexian Warhorse gets +2/+1 until end of turn. So, yeah, good, cheap sack outlet. I think there is some free sack outlets in the format, but they're not often easy to come by. So, yeah, one mana sack outlet is pretty good. And, yeah, turning it into a, you know, 5/4 or bigger is pretty nice as well. The other good things you get, you know, playing black and white, you get a lot of removal. You know, we've seen Cut Down, we've got the Extinguish the Light, which we've already spoken about. And then there's also the Citizen's Arrest, the one white Oblivion Ring that can hit a creature or a Planeswalker. So, and then there's a 4 or 5 mana flash enchantment that's similar to that as well. So, yeah, good solid removal in white-black as well. So you can keep the board clear while you're sort of trying to get your slow, grindy game plan going.
Absolutely. Love it. So that is all 10 things. So favorite archetype before we finish up, Stu?
Dimir for me.
Okay. I'm on the... I think I like the... I haven't drafted Is It yet, so that might come up. But the Simic-based decks, I think, for me, and my singular seven win was pretty evenly in blue, black, green. But yeah, definitely felt a bit Dimir. What about you, Shorty? What's your favorite archetype so far?
I actually really like Jeskai. Like I find, I said it earlier, I'm finding the two color pairs just sort of aren't quite powerful enough. And there's just so much overlap between like what Azorius is trying to do, what Boros is trying to do, and what Izzet is trying to do. Like all three of them want to be reasonably aggressive and they want to be playing spells. And there's a bunch of good tempo-y or burn spells that are pretty easy to get at sort of common and uncommon. So combining those three archetypes just leads to, yeah, a really good solid archetype. It's either that or, like you said, the green or Simic-based 4 and 5 color decks is sort of the way to go. And that's what I'm finding in Sealed. Like, you've done way more Sealed than I have, but I'm finding in Sealed, it's like my color pairs and like individual colors just are not deep enough, and you just need to be playing 3 or 4 colors just to have like the actual good cards.
Yeah, and that's fair enough as well. And I that's my experience absolutely in Sealed.
Yeah,
there's the mana fixing to support it and the payoffs. So it's definitely worth it. You're not doing it. You're drawn to do it. Like it's the balance of the set's quite good. So played some Dominaria Limited. Play DMU into your arena client and grab some packs and then jump in and do some Sealed.
Yep. So, yeah, like my advice for people playing Sealed and particularly for the Sealed on the weekend is hopefully you crack some bomb rares. That's always good. But you can basically, if you look at your green and you've got a few of those, you know, ramp or color fixing, you know, the O2 wall and those sorts of things that let you search up lands or going to help you find lands. There's a couple of artifacts, sort of mana rocks as well that can be played. But if you've got any way to fix your mana and you've got a few bomb rares in different colors, just play them. Play green, play all your bomb rares, and then just fill the rest of your deck out with removal and whatever else you've got that's, you know, good bounce spells and things like that, and you're probably going to do quite well because, yeah, Sealed is definitely super slow. And, yeah, just play almost all of your dual lands that you crack in your seal pool because they're almost free. Like the format is quite slow in sealed, and yeah, just having access to them for random domain things or random off color kickers is pretty handy. So that's my advice. All right. So speaking of sealed, we'll wrap up the reminder on the way out. We've got our sealed event this weekend. So 11 a.m. Saturday, I've posted in the Discord the instructions and the details for the event. So, yeah, open up your seal pool Saturday morning, send us a copy of your seal pool so we know what you've got, and then 11 o'clock we'll be kicking off round one and playing some seal. This is going to be cool. Like, you're not playing, are you, Stu? You've got something on, I think, on the weekend, but Chewy, are playing?
But it might be up in the air at this stage.
Okay.
Okay, yeah, no, I am locked in. I've I've figured out the chores I can do around the house between rounds, so I'm still progressing things around here, but still going to get lots of games in. I'm the numbers look great. I haven't looked on Challenge recently, but over 20.
We're 26 at the moment.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, we've had 26 registered, I think, before for a one-day event, and then we had a few dropouts, so it dropped down to 22. But I think we're pretty firm on these numbers. So we may get a few more last-minute people, you know, that their plans fall through for the Saturday and they jump in. But, yeah, 26 is good, and, yeah, it's looking like it's going to be an absolute blast. So I'll be streaming that. I'll kick the stream off probably just before 11, and yeah, we'll get into that. I should have a couple of things we can give away on the stream as we usually do, and yeah, just enjoy playing some sealed. So hopefully you got some good advice out of that. I think I'll be re-listening to this podcast to learn a bit more about these archetypes, because yeah, there's definitely a few that I haven't explored yet and sort of want to know the options and find those little synergies that that aren't as obvious. But yeah, definitely this set is very cool. There's a lot you can do, and if you really figure out this card with this off color kicker is something I definitely want to be playing, then you get heavily rewarded for it. So have fun, enjoy it, and yeah, come and play on Saturday. So that's going to do us for this week. Just blast through the usual wrap up. All the links for everything is in our show notes, so go and check them out there. You know, YouTube, Facebook, all that sort of stuff. Josh and Pats, come and join us in our Discord because it is awesome. And yeah, if you want to find me on Twitter, I am at PeaceInc. Chewy, you are?
At ChewyMTG.
And Stu?
At MStewy.
Very good. So that's it for this week. Thank you, as always, for listening. Stay safe out there, and we will see you all next time.